Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Do you wish you knew the saints better? Overwhelmed with all the events in Catholic history and just wish you could tie it all together? It's tough work, and even scientists have determined that it takes approximately 400 repetitions to create a new synapse in the brain. Unless it is done with play, in which case it takes between 10 and 20 repetitions. Introducing Saint Cards, where the facts about saints and history are presented in fun and engaging games for ages 4 to 104. Check out Saint Cards at saintcards.com and begin the fun for your family, school, and parish today.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this audio cast number 25, we actually hear some good news that priests are doing when they tell the truth. So just sit back and...
One, two, three, listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep dish discussion that will actually encourage you about the church's priesthood. We know that there is just so much bad news out there with how priests have kind of separated themselves from reality, how they have kind of acted above the law, priests and bishops, of course, and by the way, only a small number of them, but really just it only takes a few bad apples to spoil the whole apple cart, right? And so it can be very discouraging when we hear of so much bad news in the priesthood and in the hierarchy of it, especially when it comes to not telling the truth, especially when it comes to not just rolling up your sleeves and doing all the hard work that is necessary. And that's why in this appetizer, this amuse-bouche, I'm going to give you all what you all really need right now and what I need right now, some good news about what priests have done who were willing to get back into reality, to roll up their sleeves and to do the hard work, and more importantly, not be afraid of the media to tell them the truth. So just enjoy this deep dish discussion and make sure you hear my carryout order, because I'm going to talk about how one of the problems with the clergy sex abuse scandal is clericalism. And I know there are a lot of conservative-minded people who might say, come on, Leo, it's not about conservatism. It's about cover-up. It's about scandal. And it's not about clericalism, excuse me. It's about cover-up and scandal and homosexuality. Well, that might be the case. But guess what? When you hear the carry-out order, you will hear why I think clericalism is one of the great diseases in the Catholic Church that has led to a whole host of problems. But for right now, just enjoy this deep dish discussion with my special guest, Father Kikuthi and Joe D'Ambrosio, with a story that will knock your socks off. This episode is brought to you by Select International Travel, where they have not only compassion for the pilgrim, they have passion for pilgrimages, and that's why I want to invite you to any of my upcoming pilgrimages, including one in October. I have just a few spots available for a special Tuscany retreat. We're not only going to go to these faith capitals in Italy, we're also going to visit food capitals, and we're going to see parts of Italy Italy that most people would never even see because they don't know about it. So it takes an insider like me and also the assistance of Select International to put together the most unique trips out there. For more information, just visit me at fatherleofeeds.com/travel or selectinternationaltours.com and give them a call at 800-842-4842. That is 800-842-4842. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo. And today I have two amazing men with an amazing story. We have Father Neil Kakuthi, who is the pastor of St. Clarence in North Olmsted, Ohio. And his maintenance man, Joe D'Ambrosio, is really the story of, perhaps for me, one of the great stories of forgiveness, but at the same time, justice. Now, Joe, how long were you in prison?
Over 22 years.
And tell me, for what reason were you put in?
They said that I killed a 19-year-old kid that I didn't even know.
And what were the circumstances that led to them saying that you would be that guy? I mean, did they actually have a good case?
No, they had no case at all, except the real murderer pointing his finger at me and saying he stood there watching my me and another man killed this 19-year-old kid.
My gosh. And you didn't even know who the kid is?
Nope. Never in trouble before with the law. Honorably discharged sergeant out of the military. And they believed a drug addict, alcoholic, dishonorably discharged, welfare cheat, the actual murderer.
Yeah. Well, that about sums it up.
That about sums it up. And Father Kakuthi would have not only a legal attitude towards it all, but also a pastoral attitude. Now, Father, you're very unique in many ways. Before priesthood, you were a registered nurse.
15 years of trauma nursing.
Trauma nursing. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, well, not at the same time, but at what point were you also a lawyer?
So I became a nurse in 1982 and graduated from law school in 1987. I was working days as a nurse and putting myself through law school at night.
So first of all, let me just say that I hate you as an overachiever. I'm kind of jealous of you in a Christian way. And so not only do you have an understanding of the law, you also have a bedside manner and a compassion, which kind of is a perfect combination for you to be a Catholic priest. Now, how did you meet Joe?
So Joe's mother died in December of 1998, and death row inmates are not permitted to attend relatives' funerals. Mm. So I attended his mother's funeral as a concelebrant at a local church in his stead. And then in late December of 1998, when I was visiting on the row, another inmate on the row, I asked the corrections officers if they would end that visit early and bring Joe out so that I could walk him through his mother's funeral.
Oh my goodness. And obviously.
And they did not need to do that because I was not one of Joe's on his visitors list.
Okay, Joe, and you didn't really know Father Kakuthi then.
I knew him from just waving to him, and I knew him from the guy that was in the cell next to me that he was actually visiting.
Got it.
So he would tell me about him. And then when...
What did he say about Father Joe? I mean, Father Neil.
Father Joe.
Father Joe, that would be great.
That ain't going to happen.
Hey, listen, your story has a lot of twists and turns. We don't know how it's going to end up eventually.
This is true. We never know what God has in store for us.
I think that's a good bet, though, that you are going into the priesthood.
Well, I forgot the question.
The question, don't worry. The question was simply, what did you hear about Father Neil from your friend, your neighboring cellmate?
Keith Hennis. Actually, what it was is not only was Father visiting Keith Hennis, mm-hmm. he was also sending guys birthday cards and Christmas cards and stuff like that.
Got it.
So I knew of him, but I never actually sat face to face with him.
So let me just ask you this. Prior to even you getting locked up, what were you doing?
Actually, I got out of the military like an idiot, which I never should have done. And I thought I was certified as a mechanic through the military. Come to find out I wasn't. I was going to go back in, but I lost my discharge paperwork. And back then there was no computers.
Sure.
So everything went snail mail. So they had to write to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri to get a certified copy. I needed a job to hold me over for a few weeks.
Okay.
I was sitting in a bar throwing darts, and this guy walked in and just threw out a general question, who wants to do landscaping? Well, I grew up on almost a farm, so cutting grass is like second nature to me.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I can cut grass for a few weeks, and then I'll go into the military. I got hired on September 1st, 1988, September 26th, I'm sitting in jail, and accused of killing this 19-year-old kid.
So what were you doing when the cops came to you?
Sitting on the toilet, getting ready to start work. And the next thing I know, my bathroom doors kicked in, and I see two guys in plain clothes pointing their pistols at me.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, I'm dead. Oh, I'm dead.
You had
until I heard them say cops, and then I'm like, oh, cool, okay. Well, something's
so
going
someone,
on.
So they kicked your door in. They kicked in your bathroom door. Yeah. You're trying to use the facilities
right.
there. I hate to say this, but talk about a crappy day.
Tell me about it.
This is miserable. Then they lock you up. What's going on in your mind?
Well, I was never in trouble before with the law,
sure.
so I didn't have a clue. I didn't know any police. I didn't know any prosecutors.
And
I didn't
how
know
long
any
was the prosecution trial before you even were locked up and
well,
put on death row?
I was arrested September 26th. Okay. May 9th, I was convicted.
Oh
I have the
gosh.
Shortest death penalty trial in the state of Ohio history, 2¾ days from let's start to you die.
And so, Father, just as a lawyer, you kind of scoffed at the fact that the when I asked how long the trial took.
Well,
why did you do that? I'd love to hear it.
The whole idea of this, I did not go to visit Joe to begin working on his case at all.
You're a priest.
I was a priest. I didn't have a whole lot of time to do investigation on a murder case.
Are you kidding me?
So
that's crazy.
So I only went there to help him through his mother's death.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, I know you're, I thank you for your visitation. Thank you for celebrating the funeral, but I need help.
So, Father, you have worked with people who have had infractions with the law as a lawyer, as a priest. You know, people have sometimes split personalities and consciences. Do you believe everything that you hear when you're going to
I
the prison
not,
system?
I did not believe him,
uh-huh.
but I did not necessarily believe him either.
Got it.
When he told me that his trial was 2½ days, I said, there's no way that a capital trial can be conducted in 2½ days
okay.
and justice be done. So that was what convinced me to look at the case. But what I wanted to do for myself was to independently prove the things that he was saying. Everybody thinks I'm the bleeding heart liberal priest.
Okay.
I'll wear that badge.
Okay. Hey, listen, liberal means freedom. We'll take that. Okay.
I'll wear that badge, but I wanted to independently verify the things that he was telling me were true. And lo and behold, I was able to verify the
okay.
things that he was saying.
Because it's a ridiculous case. I'm telling him this fantastic story. Everyone's lying but me.
So let's hear a little
police,
bit of the story.
Coroners.
Let's hear a little bit of the story. What were they saying you were, what you did? Just, you just killed this kid? Was there any motive or?
Truly, there was no motive to it. What they did is they took two total different days
yep.
and put him into one to put me with the guy that was killed because I was with him the day before, admittedly so.
I see.
But what it was is the landscaping company I worked for, the owner of the landscaping company, everybody at one time or another that was involved in this case worked for that landscaping company.
I see.
So they all used to hang out together. So we went to a few bars the night before he died.
Sure.
And he was there.
I see.
So they took that and said, well, okay, you went to the bars and then you drove around and then you took him to the creek and killed him. And I was like, no, we went to the bars, we drove around, admittedly so, but then I went home. And they're like, well, okay, prove you were at your house
yeah.
at 3:30 in the morning. And I'm like, well, I was in bed sleeping.
Yeah. And you had never been,
never
you've never
before.
Violated the law
no.
or anything like that.
Nope.
What is this man's name who died, by the way?
Anthony Klan.
Anthony. And so, first of all, may his soul rest in peace.
You bet.
And at the same time, I just want to kind of hear the emotion of what you're going through when all of this is going on.
At the beginning, I was blowing it off as a joke. Not a joke. But
sure.
I'm like, okay, they're going to see I didn't do this. They're going to open up the cell and they're going to let me out.
You've seen, did you experience war? Were you actually in combat?
No,
okay.
It was during peacetime. It was 81 to 85.
Well, regardless, thank you for your service. But you actually, you know that if you go into the military, you can experience some difficult things.
Right.
But this is a difficulty you never expected.
Oh, by no means. Never in my wildest dreams that I ever think something like this would happen to me.
So can you just kind of describe in some words, what were some of the feelings that you were going through or thinking at the time?
It's every emotion from the most high that you can think of to the worst that you can think of,
mm-hmm.
and then think the worst times 100.
And your family, did you have a chance to even speak to them?
Initially, I didn't even tell them I was arrested because, like I said, I expected them to open the door any day
yep.
and let me out.
Okay.
And then in a blink of an eye, my trial's over with, and I'm on death row.
Okay, and so what I'd like to do is, Father, when you met Joe, and just give me the year again that you met Joe.
To sit down with him in a conversation was 1998.
1998. And had you even heard of Joe's case on the news or anything like
no.
that? So you had no clue whatsoever. You were going to visit his neighbor.
That's correct.
As a chaplain?
Correct.
And then finally the neighbor said, if you think my story is crazy, you need to speak to Joe here.
That's correct.
And why did you? You are busy. I don't understand this, because usually as a priest, you are asked to see inmates because they requested it. Did Joe request you?
No. It was just a matter of, here's a man whose mother died and he can't do anything about it. And, you know, grief is something difficult to deal with anyway, but grief in absentia is even worse.
Yes, it is.
And so I really wanted to help him with his grieving process.
Oh, my God. You are a good man.
So I reached out and...
Exactly.
And now he's stuck with me.
So you reached out and you says, hello, I'm Father Kakuthi, and I just want to express my condolences to you. And then what did you do, Joe? Just like,
well, he was trying to walk me. He's sitting there telling me, you know, what the readings were, what the dress she was wearing. And, sure. I'm thanking him profusely.
Sure.
But I'm like, you have to help me. They're trying to put me where she's at. And I didn't do this. And he was like, I can't. And went back to telling me about the funeral. And I'd interrupt him again and thank him again and be like, you don't understand. I had nothing to do with this whatsoever.
We had 20 minutes for this conversation before they kicked me out. So this is all crazy. Taking place in 20 minutes.
Can I just back up real quick? The judge hits the gavel and says, you are condemned to die.
Yeah, 60,000 volts will pass through your body on, I can't even remember the date that they said.
And so I've seen this on the news. The courtroom, it was filled or something? Or
it really wasn't. They didn't make a big stink out of it.
Anthony's family, were they there?
I'm not sure. Okay. I was the defendant.
Sure, but you were just kind of in a zone.
It was like I was standing there, and I was like over my body, looking down at it, and not comprehending what's going on.
Okay, yeah, you've never been in prison before,
right? I'm like I said, even as that quick trial was going on, I expected the judge to like just bang the gavel and say, really?
"I'm kidding." Yeah,
go home.
Jail is hard enough, death row, because you've been exposed to both.
Just death row.
And I mean, in just a few words, how would you even describe that experience?
Take your worst nightmare and your biggest fear and your deepest, darkest thoughts, and then multiply it times 1,000.
And that's why you, Father Kakuthi, go to help out. you literally go in there.
So he was telling me, all these things that about people, places, and times, and I verified it. But what really threw this case open is that while I was verifying what he was telling me, I went and I looked at criminal records at the Justice Center.
Sure.
And the very last record I pulled was Anthony Clanz, the deceased. Why would I pull his record? He's the victim.
Sure.
But I thought, I'm down here, I might as well pull his record.
And you were able to do that because you still had your lawyer.
Anybody could do it.
Anybody
can
do it.
Public record.
But you did it with a legal mind.
I just went down and I pulled the records.
And?
What did you discover? And as I'm going through Anthony Clanz's record, I find out that in May.
Mm-hmm.
In May of 1988, Anthony Clanz, the deceased in this case, had witnessed a rape.
Oh.
He had witnessed the rape of his roommate. His roommate was blind and suffered from cerebral palsy.
Oh, my goodness.
So Anthony
was it a female or male roommate?
It was a male roommate.
Okay.
So Anthony comes home. He interrupts the rape.
Oh, my gosh.
That allows his roommate to escape.
My goodness.
His roommate goes to the police. They arrest the rapist, a guy by the name of Paul Lewis, the very next day.
Okay.
Paul Lewis is indigent. He has a previous rape conviction. And he's now sitting in prison or in jail downtown Cuyahoga County. The summer of 1988.
Oh.
So the rape victim gets a notice that he needs to appear in court for a pretrial. He can read if he's got it like within an inch of his eye.
I see.
And so he reads the notice that he has to appear in court. He does indeed appear on court on August 11th of 1988. His blindness caused him to misread the date. They was supposed to be there on August 1st.
Oh, gosh.
So he failed to show up. So because he failed to show up for the hearing,
they released
the rapist.
Him. Oh, my goodness.
The rapist, then there's only one witness in the case.
That's right.
Anthony Clanz.
That's right.
Anthony Clanz shows up dead. So the case goes away and the rapist points his finger at Joe.
My goodness. And the rapist pointed the finger at you because
of the night before
because
Anthony
of the night
died,
before.
They tied me in with the kid that got killed.
Outing.
Yes.
Wow, this is kind of deep stuff. And you were in prison for how long? On death row for how long?
Over 20 years.
20 years of living hell.
Yes.
Knowing that you were 100% innocent, clueless.
And no one's listening to me until he came.
And you were going to be killed until when? I mean, like, what did they give you a day?
Well, I actually came within 3 days of being executed.
You have got to be kidding me. You are making me, like, literally crap my pants with just absolute... my stomach is turning right now because you're going to die in 3 days. These are very significant numbers for me as a Christian, right. Number one. And you literally, out of just compassion, look up his story, even though we know a lot of people are in prison because they deserve to be there.
Correct.
What was it in your kind of experience of Joe did make you even want to take this case? Listen, priests are busy.
So, you know what? A lot of people say that, you did this because you're a priest. My faith informs this tremendously.
Absolutely.
But I will tell you that it was not a faith matter by which I took it.
Go ahead, Father. Tell us what this is now.
This was a human rights issue.
Thank you.
This was an unjust conviction.
And so you believed him.
I did not disbelieve him.
You did not disbelieve him, but you just knew there was doubt.
He had pointed so much information to me. The one thing that he pointed out to me is that Anthony Klan's neck was sliced from ear to ear.
Oh.
But they missed his carotid arteries and his jugular veins.
Which means what?
So all of the major blood vessels that supplied the brain were intact. The knife did not sever any of them.
All right.
But what the knife did do was open up two large holes in Anthony's trachea.
Okay.
So that's the windpipe.
Yes.
And the coroner testified that with two, and I have the pictures, the two large holes in his trachea, that after these holes were created, Anthony fled his captors screaming for his life. You cannot talk with a compromised airway.
Wow.
Let alone scream.
And this is where the nurse thing.
This is unbelievable.
So I knew that either the coroner was lying.
Yes.
Or she was improperly cross-examined, or somebody didn't know what they were doing. I knew that that one fact
that
was incorrect.
Holy God.
So I started asking, what else, what else, what else, what else?
So you reopened a 20-year-old case.
No,
well, the case
10.
Was still...
Oh, 10 years 10, old.
Well,
okay.
The case was still... It had just moved into the federal courts.
Okay.
Which is the last...
Sure.
You know, when he's done with federal courts, he's executed. So I came in... About halfway through his case.
Yeah.
Halfway through his case.
But what we did discover, my coming in discovered more evidence that had never been presented before.
And the rape was never brought up before. So that blew the case wide open.
Okay.
As soon as he found the rape.
And this Paul Lewis, the actual murderer.
One of two.
Wow, the plot thickens. Who was the second one then?
That was the foreman of the landscaping company.
Oh my gosh. And why was he even involved? Obviously, Paul would want to protect himself.
It's so complicated.
I mean, it is complicated, but guess what? Just give me the synopsis. I mean, because if not, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see the whole story, you can go to CNN Death Row Story Season 1, Episode 3. There you can actually put a face to these voices.
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Joe D'Ambrosio and Father Neil Kakuthi, who really didn't know each other, but by a strange turn of events.
Oh, it's the grace of God.
It truly is. The grace of God, which we're going to talk about soon, but I want to hear who the second person is who committed this horrific act. First of all, the rape is horrible enough. Now it's a murder. And then who was the second guy, the foreman?
So Eddie Espinoza worked with Joe on the landscape company.
Okay.
But on the night, Thursday night, he was part of the drinking group where they were doing their little pub crawl.
Got it.
Around the neighborhood. And he and the deceased got into a very significant argument in the men's room that night.
Okay.
And we're not sure what that argument was about.
Okay.
We had some inkling that it was a love triangle.
It sounds pretty weird to me.
Yeah. It's a love triangle. And so they were able to say that they got kicked out of the bar.
Was this a gay bar?
No, it was not a gay bar.
It was just a straight bar.
It was a heterosexual love triangle.
Okay.
With Eddie's supposed common-law wife and...
Eddie and Anthony Klan.
Anthony Klan, I see.
And we think they were arguing in the bathroom. We're not absolutely sure.
At this stage?
But
how were you able to point... Let's put it this way. We're going to come and take a quick break, and when we return, we are going to see how a nurse, a lawyer, and a priest comes to the rescue.
Sounds like a joke, don't it? No, it's not, by no means.
Listen, Joe, the fact that you can even laugh about this and have a smile on your face is not a joke, but it's a part of the divine comedy of God. And we'll return with more Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. I can't thank you listeners enough for being part of this movement that is really making some great efforts in the church dialoguing with the rest of the normal world. You know how sometimes we are separated from the reality? This show is one that speaks human language in human reality to help us not just to stay humans, but to become saints. We all need to learn from each other. And that's why for you premium subscribers, those people who donate $10 or more each month, you certainly help us to foster and grow this program. And I encourage you, all of their listeners, if you haven't done so yet, please subscribe on any of your favorite podcast platforms. Share this with family and friends, and please consider making a simple donation of $10 or more each month so that you can receive premium content and help us to promote a movement that creates conversation that leads to conversion. Learn more at fatherleofeeds.com/listen or visit the new Shoot the Shiitake website, shootthesheitake, that's two I's in shiitake.com. And we are back with Joe D'Ambrosio, the maintenance man, really. He calls himself the jack of all trades here at a St. Clarence Church. And Father Kakuthi, Squire and Nurse Kakuthi, who is just, first of all, not only the pastor of St. Clarence, but he was also the priest, lawyer, and the nurse who had enough compassion to get into Joe's story 3 days before he's ready to die on death row. And by a series of events, you uncover some evidence about this crazy possible love triangle, a rape that was stopped. This is the stuff of a movie. Have there been movies made of this?
Well, there was some guy who thought about writing a screenplay on it, but the screenplay he produced was not really well done.
That's right. I believe that. That happens. Well done. Okay, so tell me, what was it that just kind of made you say, I'm taking this to court again?
I just realized that this conviction was, there was no veracity to it, and mm-hmm. that it was unjust. And when Joe said to me that I'm an innocent man, I said, you look me in the eye. And I says, I want you to tell me, look, and this right. close, I said, I want to hear from you that you did not kill this kid.
Yep. And by the way, as he's saying that, they're like maybe less than a foot apart from each other, and Father's got his finger in Joe's face.
Right.
And I saw that. That was actually that gave me a little shivers.
That was exactly the way it was.
And so he literally had his face up against Joe's, just pointing at him and saying, you tell me the truth. And Joe.
And then he said, if you lie to me one little bit, he says, I don't care what it is, what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
You lie to me one little bit, I'm not going to help you.
Okay. And so what did you say, Joe?
I'm like, okay. You bet. I got no problem because I'm not lying about anything, no matter how fantastic the story is, because I'm saying everyone's lying. The prosecutor's lying. The police are lying.
And this is, how many years ago was this again?
1998.
And you were in prison for how long again?
At that time, 10 years.
10 years in prison, and your story stayed the same? Did you find any equivocation or any kind of back and forth in his story?
No.
And I testified at my own trial.
Okay.
That's the only evidence, really.
And what did your original lawyer do?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Okay, that person should be disbarred. Just, I mean, in my opinion, in my humble and therefore correct opinion, and Father Kakuthi is just not saying anything because he's a good man. Okay, so you guys get, I can almost hear the music in the background. And what happens then? You say, you got a stack of papers and you go to who? Some judge?
I went to the media.
Thank you! Thank you!
Which isn't easy.
That is, but that's exactly what priests don't like to do, talk to the media.
I went to the media because I thought we got to get this, and the media did not respond well.
Okay.
Because nobody, you know, they're interested in the case before the man is convicted. But once somebody's on death row, the media doesn't treat them so kindly.
That's right. And so you have the stack of papers. What happens?
So I went to the media, and I actually started with several different reporters from major newspapers from Southern Ohio all the way up to Northern Ohio.
Okay.
And none of those people, feature writers, wanted to even have anything to do with me. So my very last thing is I went down to a woman by the name of Karen Long, who was a story writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And I said, listen, I don't want to talk to you over the phone. I want to come down and sit in your office and I want to sit in front of you and I want to
talk. Because that's exactly what reporters normally do, right?
And so I went down with all of my, his transcript and all of the papers and everything that we had discovered. And I put it down in front of her and I said to her, listen, you know as well as I do that there are more than one way to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so I'm going to tell you the story that the state told back in 1988. And now I'm going to tell you the story of 1998.
Okay.
And see the two. And when she saw the two, she
What kind of reporter was she?
She was a feature writer. She was a feature writer for the
Cleveland Plain Dealer. Okay.
Yeah, a columnist.
And then she said what when she saw the evidence?
Well, she was astonished. She literally then went and did it.
Did you have a relationship with her? Did you know her at all?
No, first time I met her.
Okay.
She literally then went and wrote a front page, above the fold, feature story in the Cleveland Plain Dealer on Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, my.
2001?
Yeah.
2001, I think it was.
But the amazing part is the Plain Dealer was for the death penalty.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no... They were always for the death penalty.
Sure.
So for her to actually do this was...
So hashtag, this was not fake news.
Well, right. Absolutely. And she then went and interviewed the father of the rape victim. I mean, she literally...
She did her job.
She put things out in the media. So finally, people in the Cleveland area are looking, what's with this D'Ambrosio case?
Okay.
And so now the Plain Dealer followed this story for the next 10 years. It was big in the Plain Dealer for the next 10 years.
So 10 years already in prison on death row, another 10 years of investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So this takes a lot of patience here.
Oh, yes.
So, Joe, for you, were you ever at one point, and just be honest, saying, it's like, come on, priest, why don't you get your show on the road here?
Oh, it was the opposite. No, it was the other way around. I had to calm him down.
Oh, really?
Because I actually had an evidentiary hearing that lasted longer than my trial did.
Oh, my gosh.
And when we had that evidentiary hearing, was in 2003, the judge didn't rule until 2006.
Oh, good Jesus.
And he's going nuts.
Well, I'm going nuts.
But I've already
and I'm
through.
A paradigm of patience, Joe. I don't know if you can tell. I mean, no, I'm not. So you were actually the one almost.
Because at that point, I've already gone through so many appeals and got wrapped up and yet, you know.
You had been through so much crap already.
And then you get turned down. So I've gone through the roller coaster ride.
Uh-huh.
So when it came to this, I was just like, you just got to wait.
Okay.
And every day, he's like, when is she going to rule? Oh, my God. I don't understand.
Okay, so Father Kikuthi was getting all lawyered up.
This opinion has to come out any day. And I was good for the first 6 months. I thought I'll give her 6 months to write the decision. You know?
Sure.
But after 6 months go by, I'm like, let's get this out here. You know, we got a man sitting on death row.
Sure.
And that should be free. Because when I first met Joe, I said, Joe, look what we've discovered. You'll be out in 6 months. It took in another 11 years.
Oh, my gosh. What took so long?
It's
the legal process.
The system.
Yeah, appeal after appeal after
and
appeal after appeal.
There is more money to keep a man in death row than you can ever even imagine. I mean, you know, I mean, it costs a lot
more money.
More money
to execute a man than to keep him in prison for life.
Okay.
Yes, a lot more.
Oh, good Lord.
Right.
So, 11 years of you. How many times were you in the courtroom or how many times...
So I wasn't doing his legal representation.
You were
I
not.
Was doing the investigation.
Okay.
And then I was turning things over to the attorneys that were representing him in court.
And so how did you find those lawyers then?
They were appointed by the courts.
So you couldn't even choose your own lawyers then? Or
no.
So
I was broke. If you don't have power, money, or influence and you get caught up in the system,
I know
you're
that
through.
Feeling. No power, you're money, through. Or influence. I got that.
Right.
But I've been lucky enough. I've been lucky enough to not look like an Asian or a Mexican that committed crimes. That's all I can say.
It just matters where you're
it
walking
just matters
at
where
what time
I am,
of the night.
Exactly.
Right.
All right. And so you had to work with lawyers who were appointed by the state. I'm not going to say anything negative about them, but we...
He had a dream team.
He did?
He had a dream a team because by, again, by the grace of God...
Yes.
Okay.
A non-denominational pastor in Columbus, Ohio found out about Joe, and he goes to a member of his congregation.
Okay.
And says, who was a partner in Jones Day Law Firm. one of the largest law firms in the world.
All right.
And he says, will you do me a favor?
You're kidding me.
And represent this guy.
This is, oh my gosh, I just got shivers again. This, a non-denominational pastor just goes to one of his congregants who just happens to be this named class
partner,
a named
partner in one of the world's largest firms.
And did you know this pastor?
Didn't know him
at all. Did you finally meet him?
I never met him.
Wow, I think I need to cook a dinner for the both
of
you.
Never met him.
What it was one of the death row inmates that was about to be executed, that was his pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And he told his pastor, there's nothing more you can do for me. They're going to execute me.
Now, was your friend, was he guilty?
Probably not.
There was big questions in his case.
Is he still alive?
Or yes, he actually got clemency and got taken off of death row.
Oh, my.
Life without parole. He's still in prison.
Right. Okay. He'll be in prison for the rest of his life. Geez. But at that point that he told his priest, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah, pastor.
Pastor, he thought he was going to die.
Mm.
So he's telling him, listen, Joe didn't do this. You got to help Joe.
Wow. My goodness.
And then he went and then talked.
And so this dream team of a legal defense.
Dream team. Nobody gets a dream team like this.
And so why? It's simply because the pastor interceded.
So this man, his name is Jeff Sutton.
Okay, Jeff Sutton.
And shortly after Jeff Sutton was put on, he says, I don't want to work the case, but I'll put my name on it, and that will bring in the legal resources of Jones Day for like paralegal work, investigative work, research work.
And you were still doing research.
I was doing my own, but then he comes in on the case, and shortly after Jeff Sutton gets put on the court, George W. Bush appoints him to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Oh, good Lord. Okay.
And so now he's before Congress, the Senate.
That's right.
You know, his hearings,
mm-hmm.
Confirmation hearings, and they ask him a death penalty question. And he says, well, I'm not for it or I'm not against it. He says, but a matter of fact, I have a client on death row in Ohio right now.
Oh.
He had not yet met.
Oh.
Instead, I was innocent.
So he does come then. And what he says, well, since the Senate is asking questions, maybe I'd better go and sit with Joe. And then he comes and he spends a weekend with Joe.
3 days.
And after,
he sat with me.
After interviewing Joe for those 3 days, he writes a 28-page summary judgment, which argues for his total innocence.
Oh, my gosh.
And for the first time, he cut through all the legalese.
Sure.
And anybody could read that document and understand, holy cow.
Yeah.
There is an innocent man on death row.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I'm only the sixth in Ohio history to be exonerated.
Okay.
I'm the 140th in the United States. It's a rare thing.
It's a very rare thing.
But then in Ohio, I mean, Jones Day represented him pro bono for 11 years.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Pro bono.
All right. So what happens at this stage is you are freed.
Right.
And what was that like for you?
Utterly amazing. First of all, technology in the time I was gone jumped in leaps and bounds.
So you were freed on a technicality that you discovered, Father, and you basically brought the information to a law firm. They were able to fight your case, but it still took 11 years?
They took it all the way up through the United States Supreme Court.
Oh, my gosh.
So his exoneration was January 23rd, 2012.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. It just feels like that's a pro-life March date or something
exactly
like that.
Right, right? January.
Yeah. All right. So you're freed. What's the first thing you do? And like, what do they do for you when they
nothing.
Just...
An exoneree, there's absolutely nothing in place because we're the big black guy that nobody talks about.
Okay.
So all they do is they open the door and kick you out. Thank God I have Father Neil in this parish.
Sure.
Because he hires this you. Well, that plus the support group itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this parish has shown me more unconditional love than I've ever felt before in my life.
Wow.
They have opened up their hearts to me like I've never felt.
So what was next? You got out. Father and you guys actually have obviously a deep, deep, deep friendship that nothing else can actually compare to.
Right.
And so, Father, tell me, what's been your experience now in all of this? How many years ago was this? What, like?
Well, since 2012.
Since he's been exonerated.
Okay, right. Since he's been exonerated. And what's been your experience of this whole thing? And then, Joe, I'm going to give it to you as well.
So my whole experience of not just Joe, but on death row, I say this to the guys on death row because I still work there now. The death row inmates have been the best spiritual advisors I've ever had in my life.
Amazing.
I have learned more about family values from death row inmates. I have learned more about the quality of a good education from death row inmates. I have learned about freedom from death row inmates. And I've learned, you know, to sit and listen and understand
wow.
from death row inmates. The guys don't understand that.
No,
they do not understand that at all. That blows them away when I say that. But I truly believe, I mean, I have my own spiritual director.
I have ex-cons in my life too, and I agree with you.
But the guys on death row have been the best spiritual advisors I've ever had.
Okay, and Joe, how about for you? You get out and you're probably in tears, just overjoyed. Your mom had passed since, but how about the rest of your family, the reunion with that?
Well, as the years went on, the family pulls away.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And so, but I have a new family.
Yes, you do.
The parish of St. Clarence. Mm. Like I said, I felt more love from them than I ever did my family.
Okay, and so what are you doing now? You're taking care of the grounds of this beautiful campus.
Well, I do whatever he needs, from carpentry, electrical, plumbing, all the way down to scrubbing, whatever he needs.
Okay.
I do it.
And you know what? I'm talking to you, and you just seem like one of the stinking happiest people I've met, and I would be the most bitter, jaded, angry son of a gun.
But you can't do that.
Tell me about
because
that.
Because then they win again.
Who's they?
The prosecutor, the state, and all that.
So how did you keep the sense of peace to the point where you were actually calming down your lawyer slash priest? I mean, what was it that you were doing?
Well, it has to do with my faith.
And what is your faith? I didn't even ask, and I didn't actually care.
I'm a Catholic.
Were you always a Catholic?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm an Italian, so
But
a lot of it was my faith.
And are you just bullcrapping me? A lot of people would say that kind of stuff.
No, like, actually,
what did you do to
not.
Keep your faith while in prison?
That was hard, but I knew in time. See, everyone says, because even the inmates used to dog on me about, how can you keep praying to this God? You're here 10, 15 years, and he's not answering your question. I was like, we're on God's time.
Wow.
We're not on our time. God will answer my prayer when he wants it. Not when I want it.
Did CNN bring the faith matter up here when they were filming the Death Row series?
They brought it up a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Okay,
yeah.
Season 1, Episode 3, you can get that on Netflix. And so,
but I disagree with them on the faith matter.
Go ahead, Father, tell us.
Well, we go through this argument.
This is one point where he goes, he says, you know, God wanted me out, but just on his time. I said, that's not the kind of God I can buy into.
Okay.
I said, my God doesn't keep an innocent man on death row for 22 years.
Okay.
So we go round and round about that.
Okay.
But mine is, if I was only in for a year,
mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be that much of an impact. When I say that I was in for 80% of my adult life,
mm-hmm.
you know,
public speaking.
And when I'm talking up, when we talk, because we talk all over the world.
Yes, we do. You do.
And, you know, so when I say, when we talk about this, it has a lot more impact to sit there and say I spent 22 years compared to I spent a year.
Sure.
And I think that helps open people's eyes.
It definitely seals the deal to listen to you.
Exactly.
So last question, Father Kikuthi, you're a brother priest. I am so proud to call you a brother priest.
Thank you.
But what can I do just to be of support to you? And how can I be a good priest as I think you are one?
So I think people just need to listen to their brothers and sisters. There's so much woundedness and so much pain out there. And we jump on the judgment bandwagon
very quickly
before we hear a word.
Wow.
Just by appearances. Walk a mile in the brother's shoes and be willing to listen to the stories. Once you have a story to put with the face, things change.
And Joe, preach to me. Preach to Father. What can we do to just be good men of God for you?
Like, actually, he nailed it with don't judge. Don't judge. Because as soon as you judge, because people see, you know, you see somebody with battered, you know, tattered clothes sitting on the side of the street. You don't want to look at
and tattoos on his arms.
Tattoos on, you
know. I mean, you do look
right,
like Mr. Clean.
Right, bald-headed, big bald-headed tattooed guy.
Yeah.
I was sunk before I even walked in the courtroom. You know, and then you walk into the courtroom in orange clothes.
Sure.
You're already convicted. And you haven't even been, your case hadn't even started yet.
Wow.
So don't judge a book by its covers, no matter who it is.
There is so much more here, and I will probably have to do another call and interview and ask you some more questions, but I got to tell you, this story in and of itself has been inspiring for me to learn about, but more importantly, to meet the both of you, and I can't tell you how grateful I am for the time that you took and for sharing your story, but also just for living out your faith so beautifully. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
When we come back, I will come back with my carry-out order after this incredibly deep dish discussion. Here on Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo. If you are looking for ways to strengthen your family, to bring you all closer together around the dinner table, all you have to do is check out my resources at shop.fatherleofeeds.com. There you can get some of my cookbooks, you can get my spirituality book, Epic Food Fight, that can teach you about the Eucharist. You can even get the aprons to remind you that we are all called to be servants. These make not only great gifts for family and friends for special events, they're also just great reading for you, just easy bite-sizable chapters, questions to engage conversations, and even recipes that will really bring your family to the table. So check out the resources available at shop.fatherleofeeds.com. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, and I hope you enjoyed that deep dish discussion. And here is my carryout order, which is really going to come in two parts, because to be honest with you, you will kind of make your own assessment of what you experienced from Father Kakuthi's involvement to get Joseph D'Ambrosio out of death row. My gosh, the man spent over a third of his adult life on death row. I can't even imagine that. And by the way, just a public apology here. At one point of the show, I said, I am literally crapping myself. So that you know, I do have continence. I did not crap myself. It was one of those hyperbolic expressions that I give. They're bad habits, totally bad habits, but they're just hyperbolic expressions of the excitement and the nervousness I was getting talking to these two people about this account of how Father Kakuthi was able to get this guy off of death row. I mean, talk about an amazing story, which obviously shows up on a Netflix special for CNN. So you can just definitely go and check that out. But really what I want to talk about, and this is kind of like the good news part of it all, is that Father Kakuthi is a unique man. Okay, he's a pastor in Cleveland, which is a very middle-of-the-road kind of diocese. They don't, like, lean to the left. They don't lean to the right. You know, they're just really good priests there. I mean, I know some of them, and they're just good people. You know, salt-of-the-earth, mid-America kind of priest. Father Kakuthi, however, would probably be more social justice-oriented. You know, when I met him, he was just... I was speaking at his church for a humongous event where they got like so many people, and I was doing a Feed My Faith event at his parish. And when I met him, I was surprised because he wasn't even wearing his clerics. So he was just wearing a regular polo shirt maybe. So one could easily look at him and judge him as a liberal. He would probably be shocked that I would say something like that, but let's just tell the truth. And the reason why I'm talking about this is because Joseph D'Ambrosio, when he preached to me, what did he say? He said, just don't judge people. Just do not judge people. And I'll have to admit that that's not an easy thing for me to do. Even in my institute, Voluntas Dei, which is a secular institute, and I'm a member of it, and I'm so grateful for it, they have a spirituality that requires us to have an attitude that will not criticize, that will not be destructive in our criticism, or to complain. And I just know that there are going to be sectors or parts of our Catholic Church that might look at Father Kakuthi and think, you know what, I wouldn't necessarily go to your parish because you might approach it more liberally. In the same way, if someone was wearing a cassock or a pontifical five, which is, by the way, a type of Roman cleric that is a little higher than normal, so you can really see the white around the priest's neck, as opposed to a tab collar, which just looks like a black shirt, but you slip a plastic thing in it. I wear that a lot. I sometimes wear a rabbi, which is another type of clerical clothing. You know, so, yep, there is actually style options in the priesthood. But I'm telling you this because when Joe and I re-listened to the show and Joe said, don't judge, you know, I do that sometimes. And when I met Father Kakuthi, it could have been easy for me to judge him, but I kind of knew a lot about him anyway, just my research. So I didn't care if he was a liberal or a conservative. You know what I cared about was that he confronted the truth head on. And you don't need that. You don't need an outfit to do that. You have to have a heart for justice to do that. And that's what he did. You know, I wrote an article recently for Legatus magazine and I was commenting about one of the problems, one of the problems or reasons for the problems of the clergy sex abuse is clericalism. And a lot of people who may be a little bit more traditionally minded might look at me and say, Leo, that's ridiculous. Clericalism is not the root of the sex abuse scandal. And I said, it's not the root. It is one of the roots. You know, if we think that there is a problem, a singular problem as to why we're in such a mess in today's church, then you are pretty stupid because you're just kind of looking at this only as a black and white situation. We're kind of blame it on what? A bishop? No, come on. I doubt if there's a bishop that's ordained today that is insidiously trying to destroy the church from within. I just don't buy into that. I think that some of them may be selfish and arrogant, and they just turn a blind eye to reality. And you know who those bishops are? I would say that those are the clericalist bishops, the bishops who kind of live above reality. So let me give you at least my understanding or my working definition on when I say clericalism is part of the problem. It's when you remove yourself from normal people situations. You know, when Jesus got so angry at the Pharisees and the scribes and all of the religious leaders, it was because they were, in a sense, religious Pharisees. They were clerical, and they were therefore removed from people's reality. That is one of the biggest problems that has led to this mess in the Catholic Church. I sometimes, and I'll just be very honest with you, I see priests who are so removed from reality that they don't even know how to take care of themselves. They literally do not know how to take care of themselves. They can't cook for themselves. They can't do their own laundry. I mean, and they're supposed to be managing the affairs of a multi-million dollar institution called their parish. And believe me, folks, I am not criticizing all priests. In fact, the majority of the priests that I know are amazing priests. They really are. And as there are only a few who have screwed it up for everyone in the Catholic Church, those are the ones I'm talking about. Would clericalism be the root of it all? Well, let's just kind of take a look and dig deep and investigate. Again, when did all of this abuse come about? Most of it was concentrated in, you know, the 40s, 50s, and the 60s, and the 70s, and some perhaps in the early 80s. And these were priests who kind of have been formed during a time when sexual revolution just allowed sexual promiscuity without responsibility. Many of these priests also came from a generation where maybe the family was not always intact. Mom had to work extra jobs. This is, you know, and then on top of that, dad might have been fighting in a war. And don't you think that some of these priests in the 20s, 30s, 40s, they probably experienced some difficult times themselves. And then when we think about the psychology of child abuse, while it has always been a problem, always has been a problem. I mean, they're biblical times. I'm just so grateful. St. Paul was talking about sexual abuse, even in his letter to the Corinthians, and, you know, how you can't take advantage of children. And of course, Jesus trying to protect children at all costs. You know, let the children come unto me. And if you scandalize them, you are going to be thrown. It would have been better for you to have been thrown into a lake with a millstone around your neck. The Catholic Church has always stood for the protection of children. But when someone who might be psychosexually underdeveloped and just basically immature goes into the priesthood and they're treated with a tremendous amount of respect, which I think every person deserves, but at some point in the church's history, priests were put on a pedestal. And therefore, this pedestal removed them from a little bit of reality. And therefore, if you're removed from reality, you could, in the back of your mind, think that you're also above the law. I mean, you could think that you're just above the law. And why? Because we're kind of separated from reality. So that's kind of my take on clericalism and why I think it is a problem, because it separates us from reality. It's the exact opposite of what Jesus did and what Father Kakuthi did. You see, Father Kukuthi would have been a little bit more of a social justice-oriented priest. He is, and I'm grateful for him. I really am. And while he may not be a very traditionally dressed priest, at least when I met him, I know he wears his clerics, for God's sakes. I've seen him in pictures with that. But he's just one of the guys who just wants to be a part of people's lives. I saw him operate that way in his parish, which is why it was thriving, and which is one of the reasons why he was willing to just roll up his sleeves and dig deep into this case with Joe D'Ambrosio, who he obviously, 3 days before he was to be executed, 3 days before he was to be executed, literally intervened. It is, I think, necessary for priests today to be very proud of their Catholic faith. Please wear your clerics, but know how to wear it in a way that doesn't put you on a pedestal, but makes you people's servants, makes a priest literally into a servant. You know, in the article that I wrote, I talked about how sometimes a priest may forget that the first ordination he experienced was to the diaconate, and that was to put on an apron. A dalmatic is the word in Greek. It's basically a liturgical or a service, worship, prayer type of apron. And when we put that apron on, we will serve one another. Now, you remember I talked about judging people and what Joe was telling me at the end of his interview. We can't judge priests. We can't. In fact, well, we can judge priests. We can't judge them by how they're dressed. Why? Because, for example, St. John Vianney, he wore a tattered cassock all the time. And people thought that he was just a flake. And he certainly wasn't very smart. He failed many times, and only by the graciousness of a certain bishop, he was allowed to be ordained a priest. And people really hated him as a pious fraud. You know, they just didn't like him as a pious fraud. They actually sent letters out to get a petition to have his clergy status removed because he was such a pious fraud, people thought. When the bishop got the letter, he realized that St. John Vianney even signed it. He himself signed it and said, I am a pious fraud. That kind of attitude is what I'm hoping we can all return to. It doesn't matter what kind of clerical clothing you wear, whether you wear a more formal outfit, whether you wear a suit, whether you wear gray clerics or white clerics, or whether you don't wear any clerics at all, because there are some religious communities that don't have a clerical requirement. Technically, the diocesan priest is not required to wear his Roman clerics. But I say that because I think we sometimes think that the cloth is going to make the man, and that's not true at all. In this case, with Father Kukuthi and Joe D'Ambrosio, my very special guest, they showed how they were men of different, they were cut from different cloth. I mean, Joe, obviously very intelligent. Excuse me. Yeah, Joe was intelligent. I mean, he served in our military, so he couldn't have been a stupid idiot. In fact, he's incredibly intelligent, and I'm honored to have met him, but I just confused the name. Father Neil was cut from a cloth of academia. He was a nurse. He's a lawyer, you know, and now he's a priest. And Joe grew up in a little bit of a rough kind of home environment. He kind of mentioned that. And so he joins the military and obviously got involved in the wrong crowd. But both of them had the same heart. Both of them had the same heart. And that's what makes the man. That's what makes the person. So for all of us who are still trying to make heads or tails of what's going on in the church, I just wanted to offer you some good news that the Catholic Church is doing. And Father Neil Kukuthi gave me some amazing news. And you know who else gave me amazing news? An ex-death row inmate gave me some good news. And the Catholic Church, even though we're experiencing some difficult times, we know that you can strip us of all of our gold and all of the marble and all of the precious gems and all of the silk, all of the damask, all of the fancy vestments. And guess what? You can still be a faithful Catholic starting from your heart. And it requires us from our heart to make sure that we are not judging people's appearances, and we are not, more importantly, removing ourselves from people's reality. I know that I talked about a lot in this carryout order, and if you want to engage me in dialogue, please do so. Email me at fatherleo@fatherleofeeds.com. Or go to the new shootthesheetake.com website. That's shootthesheetake, that's two I's in shiitake.com, and just simply contact us. And also, please continue to help us out in getting these podcasts, these audio casts out there by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform, by sharing this with family and friends, and also supporting us with a $10 a month donation or more, and you'll get extra content, including this week where you hear another great example of another great priest, Father Rich Pagano. So for all of our premium subscribers, you're going to hear about his discernment, how to discern, and how to deal with all of these things that we're going through right now in the Catholic Church from just a very joyful and effective priest. So for all of our premium subscribers, you're going to be getting that in your inbox this coming Friday. But between now and then, I've got to go. Until next week, I just invite you to stay hungry. We hope you enjoyed this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, and thanks to our sponsor for this show, SelectInternationalTours.com, where they are leaders in the pilgrimage area, where they not only have a passion for pilgrimages, they have compassion for the pilgrim, creating unique tours, including the ones that I lead. So you can join me on any of my future tours. Just go to SelectInternationalTours.com or visit me at fatherleofeeds.com/travel.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.